Okay, two questions. One of the questions, I think, kind of lurks unasked in the background every time we encounter certain subjects, Kohanim. And the other one probably just doesn't get worked out. I'm not sure how much we're going to be able to really work it out today, but at least we'll try to start talking some things out. So number one, and the reason it doesn't get worked out, I guess, is probably just because of its nature and association with chuk. Whenever we encounter things, especially in Sefer Vayikra, when you have so many chukim, so it's a little bit hard to make heads and tails of what's going on in terms of any kind of tamei mitzvahs. So you say, okay, it's a chuk, like, what do you want from me? And as we try to understand things a little bit in terms of koyhanim, so I think that there's a distinction between tamei mitzvahs and Kabbalah. Because when we look something up and we find a mahalich in Kabbalah, I think it's more of a description of what's happening. And when we talk about tamei mitzvahs, I think it's more of, well, what benefit do we get from it? So in other words, the halacha is telling you what to do. So you follow it. You don't know how that works in terms of any kind of spiritual dynamic or how it does anything for you. That's what you need to do. The Gemara is all about the lumdis, about why the halacha is that way, and maybe different ways to look at it, and what you should do based on why it should be that way in a technical sense. And when you start to broach Kabbalah, so Kabbalah is trying to get at the dynamics, but how all of those things are happening, it's descriptive. It's talking about, okay, so how does that shefa work? Where is it coming from? And it's categorizing things in a way that's on a different level than the halacha and then the Gemara is dealing with. When you take a look at Sefer HaChinuch, you take a look at the Rambam and Mor Nevuchim, so they're not working in the same way. What they're trying to do is they're trying to figure out, well, what benefits do we get from these mitzvahs? And that's what we call Ta'amei HaMitzvahs. Maybe that's why it's called Ta'amei HaMitzvahs. Ta'am means like a flavor. So it's trying to make mitzvahs, chukim especially, something that resonates with us, that we can relate to a little bit better. So I think that...
Not really necessarily that we get something or that we understand it.
I think it's primarily focused on what are the benefits of the mitzvahs to us.
For example, take Shanet. It's not a benefit that we get. It brings down the whole separation of kind and evil.
Okay, I guess that would be a good example where it's sort of trying to, since there isn't really a practical benefit, although you could argue there are certain, but they're very general. Every time you want to try and find a reason for a mitzvah, you could always say, well, we're restricting ourselves, we're training ourselves. You know, you could always say, but that's so general. So to figure it out, you have to figure out, you know, more intellectual, I guess, in that type of case. But I think in general, we're looking for things that benefit us more in a practical sense. You take a look at Sefer HaChinuch and anything that revolves around Beis HaMikdash. So right away, he talks about, oh, this is the kavo, this is the, it creates an ambiance, it creates an attitude towards Kohanim. If they have a mum, you don't respect them in the same way. That type of thing. So you're right, that's not like a practical benefit in terms of what we're getting out of it, as much as it is a perspective that, but very practical. He's not dealing with
perspective, not necessarily.
Yeah, not dealing with, okay, so well, how does that work vis-a-vis Shamayim and Shefa coming through Karbanis? Like, that's not what it's about. That's already Kabbalah, because Tamei HaMitzvahs, I think, are usually people trying to figure out the benefits, and sometimes they fit in better, and they fit into more details, sometimes into less details. When you're dealing with Kabbalah, you're dealing with Mesorah. You're not trying to figure things out, Misvara. You're dealing with, okay, what do we want from me? Kabbalah, it has its own mahalach. What does it say in the Zohar? What does it say in Kisvayari? You're forced to box yourself into the Misvara. What does it say? Because I can't make up what the spiritual dynamic is. This is absurd. You know, and sometimes people may try. It's ridiculous. So, you know, you can't do that. So Tamei HaMitzvahs, there's a freedom to kind of create svaras and create a sense of how the mitzvahs relate to me and what benefit I have from them. So it's a little bit of a, it's a very different category than Kabbalah. So even though we will use Kabbalah to try and understand some Tamei HaMitzvahs, I think it's an important distinction to make. So first things first, the parasha begins, Emor el HaKohanim v'nei Aharon, that the parasha is all about the Kohanim. I think we're tempted to say, well, we've had Kedusha vis-a-vis Klal Yisrael, and of course we're the Mamlechas Kohanim v'Goy Kodesh, So we are on a higher level than the rest of the nations of the world. We're the Kohanim to the world. And in Klal Yisrael, there are also Kohanim. So just like you have rules of Kedusha to the Kohanim of the world, i.e. Klal Yisrael, so too there are rules of Kedusha that apply to the Kohanim of the Kohanim. So just like you have rules that apply to the world of Bia, of sexual relations, so Kohanim also have their rules on a higher level than Klal Yisrael, the Kohanim of the Kohanim. And then when it comes to Achila, maybe you could argue the same kind of thing. In Tumah, you don't exactly hear it so much. So we might be tempted to say that there's like a transposition now. There's like, we had like in partners Kedoshim, Emor is like the Kedoshim of the Kohanim. So first things first, what do we need Kohanim for? This is what I mean by a question I don't think ever gets asked. It's lurking in the background. It's just an assumption that we make. Okay, you gotta have Kohanim. Who says you have to have Kohanim? So what do you mean? The whole world was created like that in the very beginning. So there were the Bechorim. We know the Bechorim were exchanged for Kohanim. So it became Shevet Levi. So what do you need Kohanim? What do you need Bechorim for? Just to, you know, bring a carver. I need somebody else to do it for me. So I think that's an important question that has to get asked. Like, what's Pshat? Who says you ever need a Kohen in the first place?
It wouldn't work in America these days. The quality.
That's right. America, get rid of the Kohanim. Did you see what happened in Paris? Did you see this? They were smashing a police car. There's a demonstration. The police were demonstrating to try and get support from, you know, whatever, the people. And so somebody, these dumb, literally hoodlums. The hoodlums came along and they were like smashing the police car. And they threw a firebomb into the back of the police car. The police had to leave the car. Yeah, yesterday. Crazy. Don't go to Paris. Anyway, so that's question number one, lurking in the background. And what was the story with the Bukharim? What exactly was their status? They were supposed to give them Trumas and Maestras originally? In other words, ask the question like this. What is, in the halacha, what defines the Kohanim? Because as we'll try to spell out in a minute, there are many different mitzvahs, restrictions that apply to Kohuna. And how many of them define the Kohuna? How many of them are like our perspective towards them, or maybe like a separate issue? And I'll try to clarify this a little bit as we go on. But ask the question in this way, did they have to give the Bechorim Trumas and Maestras? Or they just had the zechus to be the ones to be Makriv Karbonos? So you have a raya. Does anybody ever give Maestr to a Bechor? What was there?
Huh?
Was there?
Did anyone give him Maeser to a Bechor?
Mm-mm. Do you have a Raya? Can you bring a Raya from Chumash? Rav Shechter, he likes to give Bechinas to guys, you know, catch them on, like, you know, obvious things. So he says to them, one of the kashis like to ask on the Bechinas is, can a woman be a Nazir? So, look at the Rambam, it's a pasuk, right? Isha, Isha, ki Yazir. Sometimes you get stuck on the pasuk.
That's not a trick question, is it?
What do you mean? It's a pasuk, right? It's Isha Isha Ki Yazir. The question is the Bechor, the question is the Nazir. Yeah, it's a trick question because it says it in the pasuk.
Okay.
Does anybody know the pasuk? Everyone's, you know, it's the yeshivish joke, you know, that the guys know the psukim because in the Gemara. The Gemara is like says. Anyway, but we're not over there now. So what's the story? Is there a pasuk anywhere that says that anybody gave Maeser to a Bechor? Sam says, yeah, Avram Avinu. Malki Tzedek. V'itzel Maeser Mikol.
He wasn't the Bechor. Shem wasn't the Bechor.
No?
He was the youngest.
So what's he getting Maeser for? And what's he a Kohen for? Why is he a Kohen?
Why was he a Kohen? He was given the status of Kohen.
So we got to research this. Is it Pshat that somehow he wasn't Bechor?
He wasn't a Bechor.
He wasn't a Bechor.
No, he was the youngest of the
Bechor. So how did he become a Kohen?
Boy.
Anyway, so something's going on over there, and you find already Avraham Avinu is giving Maeser already to the Kohen over there. Okay, I don't know. It's Arachian. But there's something going on over there, and Avraham is for sure giving Maeser to a Kohen, so we gotta figure it out. But I think.
Shechel says that he's a
Bechor? No. I didn't say Bechor. I'm just saying, that was just the Nazir word that he asks people about, you know, trick questions. But here, there is somebody called Malki Tzedek. Who is he? Is he Shem, according to Medrash? And he's giving Maeser. Anyway, something to think about. So that's question number one. What does it mean that they're always going to be Kohanim? Why is that necessary? And is it true that even includes the Matnois Kohuna to some extent, that you're already giving, that we should have given the Bechorim? Let's say that Shevet Levi never came into picture. Chida Egel never happened. So the Bechorim would be doing it. So what would be their status as Kohanim? They'd be also getting Trumas and Maeser. That would have been the same. Or did that change for some reason? So maybe not. Maybe that's what it always would have been. So secondly, there are many elements of kahuna.
Yaakov bought the bechorah. Mm-hmm. Right, so why didn't Esav want it? And you know the restriction of the avodah.
Whatever it means, right? Aleich lamus.
That's what the bechorah was the bechorah was supposed to do the avodah. It was the madness kahuna.
That's for sure.
Right,
so I'm just asking, does it go farther than that? And part of that is to try and answer the question about what exactly defines the kahuna. Because if we're going to try to figure out and categorize, at least in some way, like what exactly is the role of the kohanim and why are they functioning like that? And the second question I want to ask is that, and it's difficult to come to a real answer, is like, what? How do you categorize what's going on with this kohanim? What is going on over here? Why do they have these unique restrictions? Why can they not marry a grusha? Why can't they be metame lemes? What's the point of this? In terms of trying to give it some tamei mitzvahs, and we'll touch maybe on a little bit of Kabbalah at the end.
Well, wouldn't it make sense with the Ram says the whole point of the Karbanos was, you know, to get out the Yitzhahara that the Gaim do too. So the way that the Gaim do it is they have their priests and their, you know, other things. So it goes in line. It's the whole point of the whole of Karbanos in general.
Yeah.
Right? Are to mimic the guy and have us do, you know, that's the way that we serve the God, or God in our case.
Yeah.
Right, is through is through these sacrifices and things like that. So to take it along those paths, we do it with these priests who help us all.
So okay, we'll go through a mahalach like that with an important difference, important nuance. The mahalach of the Rambam in Renavuchim is that the reason why Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us mitzvahs of karbanos, because the Rambam, of course, being the philosopher that he was, thought that karbanos were pretty base. Well, why in the world would we need karbanos to serve a Kadosh Baruch Hu? Nowadays, I think, you know, a lot of people feel that way, but in the times of the Rambam, I don't know that everybody felt that way, but he did. See, my Kadosh Baruch Hu probably wanted everyone to be a philosopher. So the Rambam writes that HaKadosh Baruch Hu couldn't take the historical context of those people and say, okay, just start meditating, start becoming philosophers. It wouldn't work. So he had to give them a service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that they could relate to. So he said, okay, everyone's bringing karbanos, that's what you're used to. You'll also bring karbanos, but the gist of all the karbanos you're going to be bringing are not because I want you to be like everyone else. It's actually the exact opposite. And this is the yisoid of the Rambam in Mor Nevuchim in a lot of ways. The yisoid certainly of Shaar Gimel. The purpose of many, many mitzvahs is to root out false beliefs from our minds. To root out false beliefs from our minds. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu forces us to do behaviors that are against the things that everybody else believes in. So Mitzrayim, everyone agrees to this. I've pointed this out, I think, many times, that the Ramban agrees to the same with the Rambam. The Ramban disagrees vehemently with the Rambam's approach in general. Here he agrees, by Karban Pesach, this was the Shech, the god of Mitzrayim, because you don't believe in it, and you're forcing yourself to do an action that expresses that you don't believe in it. So Rambam says here too, what did everybody else believe in? They all believed in the sheep, Mitzrayim especially, right? And they all believed in the cow, the holy cow. Hindus still believe in that, right? And the goats. The goats were related with the seer and with the demons. You spoke of that a few weeks ago. So that's what everyone else sacrifices too. That's what you're going to sacrifice. So you're forcing yourself to take the things everyone else sacrifices too, and you're going to kill them, and you're going to smear their blood. You're not going to pool their blood. You're not going to keep not having anything to do with that either. And all of those details about what's going on, the Rambam learns that this was a way of actually rooting out the false beliefs by flipping everything on its head. That they're all sacrificing the lions, the tigers, and the bears. Oh my. And so we're not sacrificing those things. We're sacrificing things that they sacrifice too. And that's the general mahalach of the Rambam. And so I had a fascinating conversation with Shekh this morning. I'll tell you a little bit of mahalach maybe along those lines. But let's just spell it out. What exactly are the various issues or restrictions and mitzvahs of the kohanim that we'll try to put our finger on? What exactly is going on over there? So number one, there's certain positives they're supposed to do or we're supposed to do towards them. And there are certain things that are negatives that are restrictions of theirs. And the question is, how does that fit in to any mahalach about what they represent and what they're trying to do, what they're trying to accomplish? So first things first, trumas and maestros, right? We mentioned that already. So we have a responsibility to give them trumas and maestros, and they have to eat it with a certain kedusha. That's one thing. They don't have nachal of arts. Right? They're not given any plot of land. They don't have any specific areas for the Kohanim. There's certain the Ari Levium, and there's certain areas outside the cities that they're given. But they don't. They're apparently not really supposed to be farmers. They're not supposed to be people that are developing their own land and focused on their own parnasa in that way. So I guess I should just mention it now. So the Rambam in Shemitah the Vayovel has a famous line. We've spoken about this before too. That Rambam writes, whoever wants can be part, can become, so to speak, part of Shevet Levi. And if a person wants to just remove from himself any yoke of Parnassa, so he has a right to do that. And everybody asks the Kashan the Rambam, what? Rambam, aren't you the one that says that it's a Chil Hashem for people, it's a, for a Talmud Chacham to beg for money? You write it's a Chil Hashem. And everyone's trying to figure out with their thumb, what would the Rambam say about Kol Bizman Hazeh? Well, but Rambam, you're the one in Hilchos Talmud Torah that writes a Chil Hashem to beg for money. And now you're telling me that whoever wants to become part of Sheva Levi and just, you know, get rid of the yoke of Parnassa, you just go ahead and do what? So Rav Kahn likes to say, read the Rambam carefully. He's saying that Sheva Levi has complete bitachon and a Kadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, because they're being provided for by everyone else. Now, I'm not going to be provided for if I go ahead and I try to act in the same way. Says the Rambam, yes, you will. If you don't have a plan, you're not going to beg for money. You're not getting welfare checks. You're just serving a Kadosh Baruch Hu. You're just learning and doing chesed and whatever you can. A Kadosh Baruch Hu says, I promise, I'll take care of you just like I take care of Shevet Levi. You can become part of Shevet Levi in that way. But it's total bitachon. You don't have a plan. If you have a plan, you're going to beg for money. You're going to be on welfare checks. The Rambam says, that's a Chil Hashem. That's in the Hilchos Talmud Torah. That's something else entirely. For a Talmud Chacham to go begging for money, what are people going to think of the Torah? That's a Chil Hashem. But if a person just trusts the Kadosh Baruch Hu, so Kadosh Baruch Hu will provide for them just like he does Shevet Levi. So that's the Rambam in Shemitah v'Yoyevel. So that's one idea behind Shevet Levi also, that a Kadosh Baruch Hu wants there to be a Shevet that's not working. They don't have Nachala. They're being supported by Klal Yisrael, and they're able to dedicate themselves to Avodas Hashem 24-7. So is that a critical part of Kahuna, or that's ancillary? That's just something that we need to do, you know, for them to allow them to serve in Beis HaMikdash? Or that's like something else entirely? Were the Bukharim supposed to get like that? That was part of the question before. Was that originally the plan for all the Bukharim? No Bukhar is ever allowed to have a job. They all have to rely on a Kaddish Baruch. Not allowed to have land in Eretz Yisrael. The Bukharim, really? Would that have been true? Obviously, like we said before, the Kohanim were the ones that are makriv the Karbanos. They become basically the shluchim of Klal Yisrael. We're trying to figure out, like, what's the point? Like, why do we need shluchim at all? Why is it also for a Kohen to be metame lameis? Other kinds of tumas apparently are okay. But tumas meis, that's aser. What's pshat? Iser zoyna, iser grusha. Perhaps those go together in certain ways. They're not allowed to marry Zoyna or Grusha. You have to even force them to divorce them if they marry them. You're supposed to divorce. That's part of being Mekadesh the Kohanim. And I have another question that doesn't maybe seem so strong at first, but when we're all done, I think you'll see something very interesting from it. There's a subtle iser that the Kohen is not allowed to do Avodah, or said better, even really enter the Beis HaMikdash, and certainly certain parts of Beis HaMikdash, if he's drunk a revius of wine. So you already hear the Alam de Shekasha. Is that a halacha in Avoida? Or is that a halacha in Kohen? What do I mean? So we expect that to be a halacha in Avoida, that we're passing the Avoida. The Avoida the Kohen does is no good once he has a revius of wine. Why? So you'll say, well, either this is like a gzeira oiraisa, it's like sort of like we don't want him to be drunk. What does that mean to do Avoida when you're drunk? First of all, you have to have you do the kavana. Second of all, what kind of covet is that to walk into the Beis HaMikdash drunk? What is that? This is Avoida. Has to be taken seriously. Well, you only had a revius of wine. It's only a 3.3 ounces. I mean, come on, what's the big deal? But in any case, so what? Maybe that's a gzera because we're afraid he's going to get drunk. Who knows, whatever.
You see, the same thing applies by
Marara. Yeah. I remember, as I told you this from Shani, I went to ask her after a question, and he was learning with a guy that likes to make l'chaim with him. So he sent me like a whole shot. He's like, but you know, I can't pass him because I'm drunk. Okay, so then. There's alcohol. So that's the next question. And what's the din by Shesui Yain over here by the Korbaya Kohanim? And what if they drink beer? It's not the same, right? Yain v'sheichar al teish. That's the pasuk. The pasuk says Yain v'sheichar. But they're the same or they're not the same? Is it unique to wine? It's not unique to wine? What about if he's a little sick and he has to smoke some marijuana? So then what? What would be the din? Is it all in the, is it in the mind-altering quality? So fascinating. The Rambam, halach lemais, right? The Rambam writes that every kohen who's kosher la avoida, okay, he's not a malbom, he could do that avoida, im shasa yayin, asur lo lihikanes min hamizbeach lifnim. So he can't go from the mizbeach and inside. He's not allowed to go there. Forget avoida. He's not allowed to even go there. V'im nichnas v'ovar avoidas apsula. And if he did avoida, it passels the avoida. V'chayav misa bidei shamayim. And he's chayav misa. In Shemayim, we don't give him capital crime in Besdin, but he's Chayim Misvidei Shemayim. Shemar v'loi samusu. V'u sheshasa revias yayin chayiv asachas miyayin shavru lav mem yoyim. V'am shasa pachas mirevias yayin shasa revias v'hivsik ba. Fine. Well, there'll be exceptions to get him out of it. So that's number one. So we'll get to the second halach in 1 second. So you'd expect that this is a psul and avoida. It passels the avoida. Is it possible that it passels the kayin? So you'll say, I don't know what you're talking about. What do you mean it passels the kohen? It passels the avoida. So it's interesting. If it passels the avoida, then what's the difference if it's wine or anything else? It's just a chayik. Hi, a sheik or mishar mashkin, hameshakrin. What if he got drunk from something else, says the Rambam? Asil hikanis le mikdash. He's not allowed to go into the mikdash also. V'mnichnas v'avad, but if he goes in and he does avoida, v'hu shikor, he's drunk, mishar mashkin, but as a result of other drinks, not wine, afilu minha chalaf. He's drunk from milk. Marijuana must not multiply in the same way, I assume. I mean, hadvela, or he had some kind of, you know, date beer or whatever. Here is a loike, v'avoidas akshera. He gets lashes, but his avoidas is still good. He's drunk! Why is it good? See, right? You see from here, there's something going on. There's something about wine that's passing the avoida here, and the drunkenness is not exactly the issue. Not to drink, though. To pour on the mizbech. Right.
So it's part of
but
the
he's drinking.
It's a whole year kind of misused.
It's an interesting story. I hear what you're saying. So what I'm asking is it a psul in the avoida, or can you say there's something about it that maybe passels the kohen, and is somehow it's unique to wine? So Bli Neder, we'll come back to that. Okay, so first things first, let's try to get some halachim in the two issues. Again, issue number one is, what do you need kohanim for at all? And number two, so can we make any kind of big picture out of all of these yisurim and mitzvahs towards the kohanim to try and get a better sense about the role of the kohanim and what exactly is going on over there? So one mahalach might be that you can't pick yourself up by your own bootstraps. Right, do you know what I mean by that? That whenever a person is trying to grow, he's trying to move from madrega to madrega, so you can't do it on your own. So anytime a person's approaching a Kadosh Baruch Hu, so there has to be a shaliach there, and then the Gemara, of course, is going to get involved with who exactly are the Kohanim and the Shluchim of. Are they our Shluchim? Are they Kadosh Baruch Hu Shluchim? Like, how exactly do you do that? And that will probably be nuances of difference here. But nonetheless, when you're approaching a Kadosh Baruch Hu, there has to be someone that's going to help you go from one madrega to another. So listen to this for a minute. In Parshas Korach, so the beginning it says, Vayikach Korach, Korach took. But it never says he took anything. And it just goes on to explain that he says, what are you guys doing? What gives you the right to be the leaders of Klal Yisrael? Ki Am Kulam Kedoshim, the nation, they're all holy people. What gives you? Lam Tisnasu Akal Hashem. Why do you have the right to be the presidents of the Jewish people? So the Medrash says, what does it mean by Yikach Korach? Korach took, Rashi alludes to it, that he took what? Do you remember the two examples of the Medrash? He took like a string of techeles, right? And he says, what happens if I got a beged? It's all techeles. The whole thing. I got to put a little techeles string on the end. Well, because it's going to remind blue and a Kadosh Baruch Hu. What? But the whole thing is techeles. What's the point of a little string on that? And then he brings a mezuzah and he says, hey Moshe, let's say I got a room full of Sifrei Torah, you know? And then I got to put mezuzah on the door. That's full of Sifrei Torah! This is ridiculous. So Soloveitchik has a whole essay someone wrote up that he called the common sense rebellion against Torah authority. That the whole thing doesn't make any sense from the beginning, because if a Kadosh Baruch Hu says so, a Kadosh Baruch Hu says so. You can't use your common sense to figure out mitzvahs anyway. Tamei HaMitzvahs to give it a little flavor, fine. But to ask kashas on a Kadosh Baruch Hu's mitzvahs because of common sense, it doesn't work that way. That's the way it works. If a person will ask kashas on quantum mechanics because, well, it doesn't make any sense, well, it's too bad on you it doesn't make any sense. That's just the way it is. So same thing here. That's the way it is. This is the way that a Kadosh Baruch Hu's spiritual dynamic works. It's not a kasha. Okay, but what was he trying to say? So what he was trying to say was, Ki am kulam kedoshim. That if the whole nation is holy, the whole room is Sifrei Torah, what do I need you and the little mezuzah for on the end? I'm going to use you, Moshe and Aaron, a little string of techeles? Ki am kulam kedoshim. We're all holy people. We don't need you. So it sounds like you don't need any leaders at all. So the whole parasha goes through, Moshe Rabbeinu basically just gets them all killed, right? The fire goes out and it gets swallowed up by the earth and everyone's still upset. By the end of the parasha, Klal Yisrael is still upset. And they say, you killed everybody, Moshe, what's going on over here? Yeah, didn't you get the message? They're wrong. No, we don't get the message. Why didn't they get the message? And then all of a sudden, at the end of the parasha, so you take a bunch of sticks that represent all the Shvatim, one stick represents Shevet Levi, you stick them in Kodesh HaKadoshim, you bring them out, all of a sudden the stick of Shevet Levi sprouted and made blossoms, ooh, and then all of a sudden Klal Yisrael's convinced. Really? What changed with the stick? So I have a thought. The message of the stick is that a Kodesh Baruch Hu is trying to tell them that you need to get out of your Dalaramas. You can't be able to approach a Kodesh Baruch Hu and lift yourself up by your own bootstraps. You need someone else to be able to make you sprout outside of that. And that's the role of Shevet Levi. That to be able to have someone that you're going to that's going to help you get from here to there, that's exactly the point. Otherwise, you're just a stick that's not going to sprout. You're just what you are. You're in your Dalet Amos. You're like that beged. It's four corners. That's it. You're not going to get anywhere outside of that. And you have to have someone else to be able to bring you farther than that. So that's definitely a possible model for the whole idea of the Kohanim in general. You always need that, whether it's Bechorim, whether it's Shevet Levi, whatever it is. But it's a dynamic that's necessary in life. So whether it means you have to have a Rav, you have to have a Rabbi, Selach HaRav, Pirkei Avos, all those kinds of things. But you need someone to be able to push you beyond you. But does that really explain any of the mitzvahs of the kahuna? And so let's say that's true, so he can't make a tamei meis. Yeah, he can't marry Grusha. So it doesn't. I mean, it helps a little bit. It gives us a sense, a little bit, like I'll be Musser. But what's the pshat with all the other Yisurim?
Well, inherently,
what?
I mean, if the whole idea of that to have a Kohen type person is to have them. is to have someone to basically help raise you up.
Yeah.
Then coming out my earth is useless. Right? And what do I need to
do? Well, maybe he's not. I mean, yes. No, ultimately, what does that even mean, right?
Inherently, he's going to be the one that's going to raise me up. Right. Why?
So you're answering or just asking a question?
No, I'm asking a question.
So it
unless
could be
that that's the reason.
It could be that, right. It could be that that's the next level of answer, maybe. It's a possible model. Maybe it's not even good at the end of the day. But on a practical, you know how the Rebbeinu B'chai, right? There's al derech ha'pshat, al derech ha'medrash, al derech ha'soy. So working with that type of dynamic, so maybe that's the next step. That in order to create this group of people that's able to do that, even theoretically, if you have a Kohen Am HaAretz, so they have to be on like a higher level. They have to be someone that even if the guy is maybe an Am HaAretz, but hopefully there's a certain Kedushas Kahuna to him that allows him to draw you to the next level because there's something going on over there. So he has to have Bidachon and a Kodesh Baruch Hu, he doesn't have any land, he has to make sure that he's getting his Parnasa from elsewhere. We don't have that sense anymore, I think, in the same way as it used to be. But if a person didn't have land, he really, where was his Parnasa coming from, you know? It used to be people had farms and people had their land, and that was a very much an agricultural society. Nowadays, who has a farm anymore? So we don't appreciate it in the same way. A person that was a ger, I mean, he has to have a lot of tremendous yiras shamayim. Where is his whole parnasa going to come from? Not so pasha. But in any case, so maybe that's the idea. Maybe one could suggest that you know how the Mephilashar quotes from the Gemara, right? That there was one city in the world where nobody ever said a lie. And then one day they came to the door and said, like, where's your husband? And like, he was in the shower or something. So the woman like said a sheker. And all of a sudden people started dying and things started, they had to chase them out or whatever, you know? That there always has to be a segment of the population that's like on another madriga. So if the Kohanim are instituted, you have to be on this other Madrega. So maybe that would up it a little bit. That would help us understand some of these Isurim. But is that really true? So let's try to zero in a little bit. What sets them apart a little bit? There's some kind of Kedusha. And I mentioned to you before that we try to associate Kedusha. The Torah itself is associating Kedusha with heavy-duty physicality. That Kedoshim Tiyu seems to be an association with Bia. So you're not allowed to have Bia with this one, this one, this one, this one, this one, this one. So the Kedusha means you're not like an animal. The Rambam, Sefer Kedusha. The Rambam has a Sefer called Sefer Kedusha. Three things in it. Usirei Bia, Machalos Asuros, Nechos Shechita. So it means you're not allowed to eat certain things, you're not allowed to have certain women, and you have to shecht in a certain way. So that's Kedusha. The answer is, yeah, that's the Torah itself seems to be indicating that. In last week's parasha, that's where Kedusha seems to be associated with, is in physicality. So is that true? So it's partially true, right? They're not allowed to marry a Zoyna, they're not allowed to marry a Grusha, the Kohen Gadol has to marry a Basula, but does that explain, Tumas Meis? What do you say? Tumas Meis. So I would have said, all the Kohanim should be Mechuyev to be involved in Meisim. Why? Shlomo HaMelech. Toiv aleches al beis evel, meleches al beis mishteh. Right? It's better to be hanging out in Shiva houses than it is to be going to weddings all the time. Because he's reminded all the time, that's where people are headed. You're going to die. Take life seriously. It's a personal take it to heart. So Kohanim B'davka should have done that, no? What's the pshat that we're holding them back from that? No, stay away from Levi's. Fuck yeah, it should be the opposite, no?
You can say Levi's had a misalvo, but that's what that's
one. That's true. That's true. You're saying Shlomo Taka had this in mind when he wrote it?
I'm just saying, the idea of Shlomo concept or going to Levi's or something like that is to put us in a frame of reference, a certain mindset of the seriousness of life. The whole point of the Kohen is showing us how to live this life, how to get higher, on a higher level, things like that. So we want to separate him completely from the Tumah, from the Mace, because his job is to show us how to live this life, not how to die.
And it is, again, if the Kohen...
The whole idea of the Kohen is to show us how to live.
Right.
Right? The Mace doesn't... It's a direct opposite of what the Kohen is trying to show. So we want to separate them. We don't want to keep the two.
But I'm just pointing out that the more he's involved with Misa, the more probably he'll be involved with seriousness of life.
No. There's two ways to knock somebody back into reality. One is for them to be taking life seriously. And one is they're not taking life seriously. You have to go to an extreme of death to knock them back and to remind them how serious life is.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not going to be taking it seriously, then you're right. Then you need that, knock. But ideally, the whole idea is that you shouldn't need that knock, is that you should be taking life seriously.
Okay, that's true.
So
that
the
would
point
be nice.
Is that that's what the whole idea of a Kohen is to be teaching you how to get to that next level. So there, it's a dimension. It's a complete opposite of that.
Okay. Okay, so taking it in a slightly different direction. So this goes back to what Avrami was saying. So this morning I had an opportunity to schmooze the Rosh Hashanah a little bit. So he wanted to say a whole mahalach, but mamash al derech haRambam. So the Rambam's mahalach was that if you want to know, you want to figure out chukim, basically go take a look at historically what was happening with Avodah Zarah. And if you would know what was happening with Avodah Zarah at the time, you'll see the things that we're doing, all those chukim, were to root out those beliefs from within us. So if you take a look at what was going on in the priests of Avodah Zarah, so you'll see that all of those things that they were doing, the Kohanim are not allowed to do. Which isn't exactly the same thing as a Rambam. It's just saying that we have to be different. It's not a rooting out. Rooting out means you have to be doing something that's actually against it. Like a cognitive dissonance. You're actually writing the essay, supporting Donald Trump. That type of thing. But, yeah. But here it said, but... So he wanted to suggest like this. Take Peyus, for example. So that's also this week's parsha. So the Rambam, famously, in Mor Nevuchim, talks about the whole mitzvah of Peyus is because the Goyim, the priests, would shave them off. What do we call priests in Yiddish? A galach, what is a galach? Le galayach is to shave. A galach means because he has a shaved head, because they shave off the payas. That's what they're called, a galach. So the Rambam writes, that's because that's what they used to do, so we're not allowed to do it. And fascinating, where does the Rambam have Hilchos Peyos? In Mishnah Torah? In Hilchos Avodah Zarah. Nowhere in Chumash does it actually make that association. The Rambam made that association in his Talmei HaMitzvos, but fascinating, it had such an impact on him, or I don't know, that's how he learned, I don't know where he got it from exactly, that Hitaka put the Halachas of Peyos not in Hilchos Kohuna, well, it's not Shaykh only to Kohanim, Shaykh to every Yisrael, but he didn't put it somewhere else. Where else, where do you put it? Maybe there's nowhere else to put it. I don't know. He put it in Hilchos Avodah Zarah. But mashma, that's exactly how he looked at it. And it's because that's what the Ovdi Avodah Zarah did. So it's an Inyan of Avodah Zarah. So that's here also. So taking that viter, apparently that was a big inyan of znus by the priests, that they used to have a bezonis for the priests. So that apparently was a big inyan. He said that that because whenever a baby is produced, there's certainly an inyan of elokus happening over there, because there's a baby, there's a life, there's things happening. So the whole endeavor of bia has to do with life. So there, if a person's a believing person, you have to know that the gods are involved. So that really is as a holy act, is something that's involved in neshames, is something that's definitely a religious act in a lot of ways, and therefore the priest always had zoinois and things, hitainas. So that's something that a kohen has to distance himself from, is any kind of isra that has to do with znus or a zoina. So what about a grusha? So already that the inyan seems to be that a woman who has a husband that she divorced, but the husband is still alive, she's not an almana, so then on some level, maybe her machshavas are not exactly so pure with a new husband. So there's always still another man that's still around. So on some level, it's related to the Zoina idea. He said, I'm going to be a little bit cutesy, but... Yeah. To the guy, I guess, even though she's never with him. A little bit harder, but chalutza is there, Abana. It's not the rest. It's derabanan because of grusha.
Because of the chalal, though.
But it's all derabanan, though. Chalal, he's not allowed to marry separately. Meaning a woman who is nevelas la aser la aser, so he's not allowed to marry because she's zayin chalal.
So
I think so. Unless I'm mistaken. I think so. I think the whole category of chalutza is a derabanan because a chalutza is like a grusha, because the act of chalitza is parallel to gerushin. I think so. Yeah, so the Rav said, a lot of times you take a look. This is like a this is like a Musar Shmuz for certain categories, certain elements of the Jewish population. That people are very into death, and everything's about the yard site. Everything's about a lot of things that have to do with death. Some people are very, very much focused on everything has to do with like the Holocaust. It's a religion of death. And so the Kohen Medavka can't be involved in death. He has to be involved in life. V'chai bohem. So that I think the Rav once gave some kind of drasha like along those lines. Anyway, so that's a possible mahala, that anything that's associated with the Kohanim, whether it's the Isurim, or maybe it's even in certain mitzvahs, so maybe that's all revolving around Avodah Zarah, that we have to treat the Kohanim specifically, not like all of the priests of Avodah Zarah. Okay, possibility. I want to give you one more mahala, and we'll call it a night. Another possibility is what the Rikanti speaks about. He says that Kohanim are derived and associated and an expression of Midas HaChesed. They're an expression of Midas HaChesed. In Pasuk, Shlomo HaMelech tells us in Mishlei, Bechesed, we'll put in parentheses, Ve'emes, Bechesed, Ve'emes, Yechupar Avoin. So with Chesed, so sins are atoned. V'yiras Hashem Sur Meira. So what does it mean, Bechesed, Ve'emes, Yechupar Avoin? So if you would have asked me, I would have said, well, there are two separate approaches, there are two separate ways that a person gets kapara from Hashem. In other words, we know, for example, from the Gemara Numa and Peivav, the Gemara says, if a person does tshuva, miyira, so anything he did on purpose becomes what? Becomes like a shoygeg. Becomes like an accidental avera. He did it on purpose, but because he did tshuva, why did he do tshuva? He's afraid of getting punished. It wasn't a great tshuva. So then it becomes like a lesser avera, not as much of a rebellious avera anymore. But if a person, tshuva meyava, tshuva because he wants the relationship to be fixed with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, zedonis nasus kezuchuyos. So things he did on purpose, amazed, it becomes like a mitzvah. So what is that? So he transformed himself, totally transformed himself out of avas Hashem. So you could argue that there are two types of atonement. One type of atonement is a chesed, and one type is an emes. then when a person did a shtickel tshuva, but it's only tshuva mihira, so Kadosh Baruch Hu atones for him, that's a chesed. But if a person really does a real tshuva, mayava, so then, you know, be'emes, there's already like a din that's there. And I think that the tzlach speaks like that. So that's what I would have said in this pasuk. But the Yukalti has a different mahalach altogether. He says, you know what it means, bechesed, and perhaps be'emes, he doesn't say it in that way, which bothers me, but bechesed, yichubar avayin, with midas ha'chesed, a Kadosh Baruch Hu atones. With midas ha'chesed, what's midas ha'chesed? It's expressed as the kohanim. The kohanim are a Kadosh Baruch Hu's midas ha'chesed in the world. So with midas ha'chesed, you can gain atonement for an avera. So you have to go to that midas ha'chesed that will perhaps answer our first question, al pi kabbalah. You have to go to that midas ha'chesed in order to atone for the avera. And he leaves out ve'emes, but he says you need all of them. We know that the Kohanim were doing the Avodah, the Levim were doing the Shira, and what were the Yisraelim doing? So they also had their role. They also were doing Mamadas, they were doing Kriyas HaTorah in the different cities. They also had a role on a daily basis in the Karbanos. Not in the same way, but there were always members of Yisrael that had to be learning the Parashios of Bereishis, right? The Mishnayos, the Gemara discusses this, what they were doing. We don't talk about it anymore, Kirmat, so it's hard to remember what all the details were. But the Yisrael were also involved on some level in Karbanos on a daily basis. You need to have all three of them. Why, he says? Because they correspond to the three different midos that are required for us to be able to maintain our relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. The Kohanim are Chesed, the Levim are Gevura, and Klal Yisrael is this Tiferes, is the Rachamim, is the balance between the two. So you always have to approach a Kadosh Baruch Hu with all three of them, and all three of them are critical in terms of Karbanos, in terms of approaching a Kadosh Baruch Hu on a regular basis. He says, don't be astonished. How could it be? If Shevet Levi is Midas HaDin, so how could the Kohanim come out of that? He said that's typical of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, that he could have like a neis pesach neis. He could remove from one midah something a mamish could be the opposite. But anyway, that's a tangential point that he mentions.
So why don't we have this full thing in davening? Davening every day. We do have kohanim, you know, in Israel, whatever, they daven every day. But you don't have.
So that's interesting. That's a separate shaila about how do you define or categorize birchas kohanim. Is it actually part of Avodah or is not part of Avodah? So, Pashrib Shad is it has nothing to do with Avodah. That the Kohanim give Birchas Kohanim nothing to Avodah. In the Halacha, there are all these, maybe it's Minhagim. In the Halacha, there are a lot of details that have to do with Avodah. Like, what if the Kohen has a Mum and he's not supposed to Duch, and it's like, maybe he has covers and then he can. Like, you have all these details. You take a look in the Mishnah Berurah and whatnot. But, you know, Pashrib Shad is that it's not really Halacha and Avodah. So Bizman Azeh, the Kohanim still have a mitzvah d'oraisa to bench Klal Yisrael. That's the big shaila, is how come in America we don't do it every day? Because the shuls keep burning down whenever they try it. Right, okay, whatever. But starting to. And in Eretz Yisrael, they maintain it. They do it every single day. All right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They filed the minhag agurah. And the girl wanted to do it in Vilna also, but the shul kept burning down whenever they tried to institute it. So they stopped. It was a little spooky. Whatever. Yeah. In any case, but that's what he wants to say. So if we could take this a little bit further, so he says, so what's going on by Tumah? So Tumah is an expression of Tumas Meis, Midas HaDin. When there is an expression of Midas HaDin, the Kohanim aren't Shaykh to Midas HaDin, they can't be involved with the Midas HaDin. So the whole Midas HaChesed of the Kohen, that's the Yesod of what the Kohen represents, so then he can't be involved with anything that represents Din. To fill that in, to plug that in to the Isra, the Zayin, and the Grusha is a little more complicated, and involves a little bit more Kabbalah than I'm comfortable with. But Ayin Sham, in the Rikanti, he can take a look and see that what he says over there, that he wants to relate that in some level as well. What about, this is fascinating, what about the Bas Kohen, Kisechel Lizanois? Why? Why all of a sudden, Be'esh Tisareif, we can't give the punishment everybody else gets? So what did she violate? The whole midas ha-chesed. So mida k'neged mida. So she's punished with midas ha-din. Ha-kasha, right? Great. And finally, so let's go back to the wine. To why is it bedafka in the wine? So you have it already? So the wine always represents midas ha-din. The wine, you know, whether it's a red or whether it's whatever it is, that has to nichas yan yatsasayit, whatever all the different inyanim of wine is, that the wine represents midas ha-din. The whole inyan, alpi kabbalah, of diluting or watering down the wine by Hasidim, they always pour, 3 drops of water into the wine, right? So the whole inyan is to be mamtiges adinim. You want to be able to sweeten the din a little bit. So the water always represents chesed, wine always represents din. So it's bedafka the wine that passes the avoda. That to take the kohen, the midas ha-chesed, and introduce the midas ha-din to the kohen, so you passel the kohen. He passes the avoda memela because he's not a kohen, and if he's not a kohen, his avoda is not going to be any good. But then that would mean in the lumdus of it that it's not really a halacha and avoda as much as it's a halacha and a kohen. That the, for the kohen to introduce into his midas ha-chesed, the midas ha-din, so that ruins who the kohen is, and that's why it's bedefka the wine. Then when it's the wine, so that represents midas ha-din. Stomp to get drunk to do avoda. It's not right. It's not a covet. It's everything else. He's not going to passel the avoda because he's still a kohen. He's just a loser. But it doesn't passel the avoda. So anyway, so that's the basic of the mahalach of the rikanti. So to summarize what we did, so the two questions we wanted to know were, number one, the question always lurks in the background, is what do we need kohanim for at all? So to answer that, one of two possibilities. On a pasha level, so number one, you always need someone to lift you up by, you can't lift yourself up by your own bootstraps. You need someone else to approach to do that for you. As sort of like a step up from that is to suggest that that's perhaps why the kohanim have to be like on a higher level in general. If Rami said it was, if you have a kohen amaretz, why is he going to lift me up anywhere? So maybe by creating a whole class of people that are forced to be in a way on a higher madrega, so then maybe that helps with that. Mahalach number two was basically al derech haRambam. We'll point out a little bit differently because it's not exactly the same as the Rambam. Rambam is insisting you have to root things out. Here, it's just to suggest that the Kohanim are not allowed to do those things that were paradigmatic of the priests of the world. So all those things that the priests were involved in, those are Kohanim bedafka not allowed. And perhaps you could explain every single one of those Yisurim along those lines. And number three, that the Rikanti says, al pi kabbalah, you should know that the Kohanim represent midas ha-chesed. And once you take that mahalach, so then b'chesed, yechup aravoin, maybe it's chesed ve'emes, because emes represents Levi, but he doesn't say it like that, so I'm uncomfortable saying it, but it seems to make sense. So b'chesed, yechup aravoin, you have to be able to approach the kohen b'dafko. You represent the midas ha-chesed, and you always need that midah to be able to approach a Kaddish Baruch Hu and to be able to get kapara from a Kaddish Baruch Hu specifically. So that's why I always need to have the Kohanim, because they're the expression of a Kaddish Baruch Hu's midas ha-chesed in the world. Was that originally going to be the role of the Bukharim because they represent the midas ha-chesed? I don't know. There's a lot more work that needs to be done, as usual, on all these topics. But at least we started to broach those two issues. Number one, what do you need the Kohanim for? Number two, how can we try to create some kind of tamei mitzvah, some sort of sense of all of these disparate isurim that the Kohanim have, to try to create some kind of tzad hashavah, some kind of common denominator, at least have a little bit of a sense of what the Kedushas Kohuna really is all about.